A Friend Indeed. Written by Nagi Blue and read by Pulse Assaults. A Stargate Atlantis, SG-1, and BBC Merlin fic. Summary. Rodney is off-world on a mission with, of all people, Jonas Quinn, Major Lorne, and three Marines who aren't actually on Lorne's gate team, for bureaucratic military reasons he doesn't want to bother to understand. Not that it matters, because they are in search of Atlantis' holy grail, a source of more ZPNs. They just have to get through several obstacles first. Jonas Quinn was polite and pleasant, and it made Rodney uneasy. Not because Rodney disliked good manners. In fact, he rather disliked being on the receiving end of rudeness, even if he could admit that his impatience with some of his colleagues could be fairly and accurately classified as rudeness sometimes. The problem with Jonas Quinn's friendly smile and amiable nodding during a conversation was that Rodney couldn't really read him. After years of being on a gay team together, Rodney could read Shepard's sighs and shrugs and eye rolls, could decipher Ronan's grumbles and grunts and shrugs. Taylor's sighs and patient smiles eluded him sometimes, but for the most part, Rodney was confident that he could correctly interpret her non-verbal cues as well. Jonas Quinn was a blank slate, if a smiling one. Rodney was still fuzzy on the details as to how Jonas had ended up on Atlantis. Something about an anti-aura resistance on multiple alien planets. And was fuzzier still as to how Jonas had been assigned to accompany Rodney and a cobbled-together team off-world to explore a potential source of the crystalline substance used to make ZPNs. In their ragged band, they marched across the planet. Major Lorne on point, Rodney and Jonas in the middle, and AR-9 bringing up the rear. Major Lorne's usual team was AR-3, and Lieutenant Noyne was the commanding officer of AR-9. For bureaucratic military reasons, Rodney didn't have the time or energy to untangle. AR-9 was accompanying Major Lorne instead of his own team. "So what makes this crystal so special?" Jonas asked. Lorne said, "Reports from the initial survey by AR-7 is that these crystals have perfect crystalline structure." "Ah," Jonas said. "Of course." Rodney glanced back at him and then almost got hit in the face by a low-hanging bow as a reward for shifting his focus away from the path ahead. "What are your degrees in, exactly?" "I'm not sure what the Tauri equivalents are," Jonas said. "But back in Kelowna, I had degrees in social studies and ancient Kelownan history." Rodney glanced back again. "But do you know why perfect crystalline structure is important to ZPNs?" "The entropy of a system has a value of zero in a perfect crystalline substance, which is a prerequisite to the renewable nature of zero-point energy." Jonas sounded like he was reciting out of a textbook. "Did you read that somewhere?" Rodney asked. "Between working with Sam and all the white papers the SGC has published on the subject, I've picked up a bit here and there," Jonas said. "All the white papers on ZPNs? There must have been hundreds." Also, the casual way Jonas referred to Colonel Carter, who'd once been something like Rodney's superior officer, was a stark reminder of Jonas's long-running experience with the SGC. "I forgot you have a practically eidetic memory," Lorne said, glancing over his shoulder at Jonas. Right. Lorne had served at the SGC while Jonas had been a member of SG-1. "I picked things up fast," Jonas said, with another one of his bright and unreadable smiles. Did he really have an eidetic memory but was just being polite and downplaying his skills? Or was he actually vapid behind that smile? Not so vapid that he hadn't been on SG-1, but that was when Jackson had been gone and Anubis was at the SGC's door. Rodney glanced at the seemingly endless greenery of forest and wondered if they would ever find what they were looking for, a cave full of crystals that might allow them to make new ZPMs or maybe even help reverse engineer some. How did Lorne even know where they were going? Rodney opened his mouth to ask, only Lorne said to Jonas, "Has anyone given you access to the Atlantis weather feed?" Jonas lit up. "Yes! Duke inquired for me right after we arrived. Given that Atlantis and New Athos are the only real settlements on the planet, it's a quite simple system, but fascinating all the same." Was Jonas also a meteorologist? If he truly had an eidetic memory and the intellect to match, He could master several fields easily. Lorne interrupted Rodney's train of thought with another comment. I'll have to show you how to access the meteorologist's interplanetary forecast system. It can predict weather on different planets? Checking weather in different countries on one planet seems a big enough task. But Jonas looked delighted. We keep track of weather patterns on planets we frequent, so we don't send teams to do a raging hurricane or something, Lorne said. That sounded reasonable to Rodney, although given that he and his team had walked into storms and other inclement weather before, he was dubious as to the effectiveness of the system. Although, on consideration, that had always been on first contact missions. Rodney could recall several instances where missions had been cancelled or postponed due to bad weather. All that consideration resulted in Rodney tripping over an exposed root for some massive tree and almost face-planting it. A hand on his tack vest saved him and his LSD. Easy there, Rodney, Jonas said. Rodney blinked and then straightened up. Lorne was facing him, one hand outstretched to stop his descent. The entire party had halted. It was Jonas who had a grip on one of the straps on Rodney's vest. He was still smiling that opaque and frustrating smile. The fact that everyone else found it unpleasant was even more frustrating. Rodney shook him off. Why are we talking about weather forecasts? We're looking for possible ZPM crystals. I like weather forecasts. They're fascinating. They're like foretelling the future all over the world. Or even on other worlds. Jonas's expression was lit up, and Rodney thought he understood that, at least, like the way John lit up for remote control cars. Or the way Carson lit up when Rodney offered to accompany him fishing. Seems like they're wrong most of the time, Rodney muttered. He flapped a hand at Lorne. Carry on. Lorne made one of his arcane military hand signals, and the march resumed. The Oak says the same thing, but from what I understand, forecasts have a 97% accuracy rate across 7 days. Jonas sounded perfectly unbothered by Rodney's criticism. Why are we talking about Teal'c? Rodney grumbled, writing his LSD. Lorne glanced over his shoulder and said, He talks about Teal'c the way you talk about Doc Beckett. Rodney blinked. Then he glanced over his shoulder at Jonas, but Jonas was just looking around, head tipped back to take in the foliage. Trees on most planets had green leaves, because green was the ideal color for photosynthesis under most sunlight conditions, especially the ranges humans could survive in. The trees here were no different. Maybe the leaves were unique shapes? Rodney didn't really care. What had trees looked like on Jonas's home planet? Now Rodney was just letting himself get distracted. How much further, sir? One of the Marines called from the back of the marching column. She spoke English with only a faint accent, though given the international nature of the expedition and the science department especially, Rodney barely registered accents anymore beyond using them to identify who was speaking to him. Don't you mean Mom? Are we there yet? One of the other Marines asked, and all of them laughed. Rodney was so used to thinking of Marines as shoot first, ask questions later meatheads that he was startled at how sweet all their laughter sounded, even if they were all women. Rodney had nothing against all female teams. He was just surprised at this one. No offense, Major Lorne, but you're not my mom, the first Marine said, pronouncing mom very carefully. We're still about 3 clicks from the target listed in the coordinates, Jonas said, consulting his own LSD. Thanks, Jonas, the first Marine said. Keep your eyes peeled, Major Lorne warned. Don't want to have Poe patching up unnecessarily. Rodney glanced over his shoulder at the Marines marching behind Jonas, weapons at the ready, also taking in the sights. He squinted at their uniforms, but of course they had no name tags. He didn't recognize any of their flag patches either. Mostly red with a white and blue cross, and some kind of European-looking insignia set inside a red and white circle. That they all had the same flag patch was significant, he supposed. He wasn't sure how to ask where they were from without being rude. Maybe he could get Jonas to do it. Jonas wasn't Tauri, after all. In the grand sphere of several galaxies, Earth was rare in having such a large and diverse population. Jonas probably only had a handful of countries to keep track of on his own planet. Not that Rodney really cared what country the Marines were from, as long as they could do their job, of course. Although, Rodney had to ask, why would Poe patch us up? The woman with her sandy-coloured hair tied into two pigtail braids said, I'm a trained physician. They let an actual doctor off-world? Rodney raised his eyebrows. Says the man with two doctorates, one of the other Marines said, cueing more laughter. Rodney wasn't sure if he should be offended or not. Maybe you didn't quite catch it earlier. I'm Sally Poe, she said, unoffended. And I'm a military doctor. It helps to have someone with at least some medical training on each gate team. Rodney winced. Right. He was bad at remembering names. Names weren't as important as what people could do. Half the time he forgot Korean robotic engineer's name, but he knew the man could program a Roomba to dance Swan Lake and sing him the time in five languages if it somehow became necessary. Right. Nice to meet you. Again. Rodney forced himself to face forward and keep an eye on his LSD. While Jonas was tracking their journey toward the coordinates, Rodney was supposed to be keeping an eye out for incoming lifeforms, be it local alien, was that an oxymoron, megafauna, or wraith. Jonas spoke up. Where are you from, Dr. Poe? The Kingdom of Sunk, same as the rest of the team, including Lieutenant Noyne, Sally said. Well, I wasn't born there, but we're all citizens there now, and actually have Chinese. Chinese? Like Dong Min? Jonas asked. Right. Dong Min Lee. That was Korean robotics engineer's name. Actually, he's Korean, but it's easy to make that up. Sally's voice was warm. Ah, thank you. Jonas sounded as affable as ever. What about you, Dorothy? I'm originally from Catalonia, in Spain. She was the one who'd made the, Mom, are we there yet? Joke. Ah, hence your last name, Catalonia, Major Lorne said knowingly. That's right. Hilda, you're originally from Germany, right? Jonas asked. Austria, but close. We have the same official language, but I grew up speaking mainly Slovenian. Hilda was the one who'd initially asked how far they were from their destination. How many countries are... where on your home planet? Sorry, I didn't mean... It's fine. Just two, Jonas said. Countries start to lose their meaning in the face of planets and galaxies, Sally said. Yeah, it's less about where you came from than who you stand and fight with, Jonas said, and his voice was no longer warm and amiable, was something else. Rodney glanced back again. Was Jonas sad? Wistful? Rodney had almost died multiple times, but so had Jonas. Rodney still had his family back on Earth. He also had his team, and also Carson, though... thinking about Carson versus a clone was best left for another time. The final half hour of their march elapsed while the Marines debated amongst themselves about the best foods from their homelands as well as their new country, regaling Jonas with tales of pastries and pies and rich creams, decadent chocolates and cakes, savory sauces and melt-in-your-mouth bites of steak, and Rodney felt his stomach rumble. He reached into his tack fast for an energy bar, tore it open with his teeth, and set to chewing, trying to tune the others out while keeping an eye on his LSD. No life signs but their own. They still had 4 hours till they had to check in with Atlantis. It was a 45-minute hike back to the gate, assuming no one got injured and they didn't get lost. A galette does not count as a pie, Hilda was saying, over Dorothy's protests. But then Lorne raised a hand, and immediately they fell silent. Rodney cast about for the threat, reaching nervously for the pistol strapped to his thigh, even though he'd never be comfortable with it, despite all his training with Shepard, and... We're here, Jonas said. Rodney cast about, and that was when he saw what he'd initially registered as a shadow beneath some thick shrubbery, but was, in fact, a gaping maw in the earth. This was it? The crystal cave. Lorne signaled again, and the marines fanned out, rifles raised, all of them aiming their flashlights into the cave. Looks clear, Dorothy said. And had she always had such sleek, pale golden hair? Hilda's was so black it was almost blue, and cut almost boy short. Sir? She asked Lorne. There were no concerns about structural integrity from the initial team, and no indication of recent seismic activity, but just in case, we should send down an LSD to scan for any noxious gases that might be unexpectedly venting into the main chamber. Lorne shone his flashlight back and forth, peering into the shadows.
What are you, a geologist?
Rodney asked.
Have my master's in geophysics, Lorne said.
Rodney stared at him.
You... what?
Need a master's or its equivalent to make major. Used to oversee an off-world mine back when I was at the SGC. I know a thing or two about caves and cave-ins. Lorne barely flicked a glance at Rodney. Rodney's mind spun. Shepard was a lieutenant colonel now. What did he have his master's in?
Here, Duke showed me how to tie rope into a handle.
Jonas fished paracord out of one of his tack vest pockets, fastened expertly around his LSD, and held it out to Lorne. Lorne squinted at the device for a moment, and Rodney remembered that Thorne was one of the stronger gene carriers on the expedition. And even if he couldn't reprogram an LSD from scratch, he could at least mind control it into doing what he wanted. Lorne and Jonas worked together to lower the LSD down into the shadows, where its ancient blue glow became distant. Sally and Dorothy kept shining their flashlights down into the crevasse, while Hilda kept an eye on their surroundings. After a few minutes of maneuvering the LSD around the space below without accidentally swinging it into a wall, Jonas and Lorne reeled back in, and together they checked the readings.
Well, Doc? Lorne asked.
After a moment, Rodney realized Lorne meant him, and he darted forward, peering at the readouts on the screen. No traces of toxic gases.
We're good to go, Rodney said.
Only how exactly would they get down there? He leaned over and squinted into the darkness. Best he could tell, it was some kind of sheer drop. As it turned out, Hilda and Sally were skilled climbers, and they set up some kind of climbing rig with fancy nylon rope and a series of steel planks that didn't look nearly secure enough. But then they were both down in the cave and igniting glow sticks, and light refracted back at them, glittering off of 1,000 crystal surfaces.
Crystals.
This was it. The potential birthplace of ZPMs. Or at least the crystal substance used in their manufacture.
Who's next? Hilda called up.
Rodney went next, rappelling very cautiously downward and wincing every time his boots crunched on precious crystal. Jonas came after him, and then Lorne, Dorothy standing guard up top.
Is this all there is?
Rodney shone his flashlight around the interior of the cave, which was incredibly gloomy and dim once his eyes adjusted. He had an actual handheld flashlight as opposed to one attached to the rail of a rifle, and he clutched it tightly. He had spare batteries for it too, and even a carefully packed spare bulb. One could never be too careful in a cave. The cave opening was quite narrow, now that Rodney looked at it from below. There were small crystals studding the walls, as if they'd landed inside a geode. No single crystal was large enough to manufacture a whole ZPM. Granted, most ZPM did have a vaguely stained glass window look, seemingly smaller pieces of crystal leathered together somehow. There's a door further back, but AR-7 didn't manage to get it open, Jonas said.
Right. That was one of the reasons Rodney had been dispatched to the planet, to try to engineer his way past the door. Rodney had been so excited about potential ZPM manufacturing facility, that he tuned out a lot of AR-7's presentation after that announcement. AR-7 was one of the geology teams, and they'd probably lead the project once the crystal mine was properly explored and vetted for utility to the expedition, but first people had to get inside.
Show me this door, then. Rodney couldn't keep the giddiness out of his voice.
Lorne took point again, and they shuffled through the cave, ducking their heads away from the crystal spearing down from the ceiling. As they walked, Rodney couldn't help but glance over his shoulder at Jonas. Why was he useful in this mission? Other than he was here from the SGC for goodwill or something. He was basically a tourist in this galaxy. As long as he stayed out of Rodney's way, everything would be fine. The door in question didn't look like any of the doors on Atlantis or other ancient warships. It looked like it had been formed out of the walls of the cave itself, the same color and possibly the same substance, as if someone had stretched the walls of the cave into a single, perfectly flat barrier right in the middle of the tunnel. It didn't have any seams or rivets or any other indication of how it might have been constructed. It doesn't have any buttons or control panels, Jonas noted. How are we supposed to open it? Hilda asked. It might have been installed from the other side, Jonas added. Rodney frowned but didn't look at him, instead scanning the door with his LSD. What makes you say that? There are crystals growing out of the wall and past the edges of the door, and fairly large ones at that. If the door were pushed into place, the crystals would have been cut away, Jonas said. Not a bad supposition, if you're assuming that the door was installed like any other door. We have no idea how the door was constructed, Rodney said. He wasn't getting anything on the scanner. He waved it back and forth across the door, and there was a sudden spike in energy readings. There, Rodney said. He held his hand out, searching for any mental connection to ancient technology. There was a faint buzzing in the back of his mind, like a song being played in another room, barely loud enough for him to hear but too faint to recognize the tune. He strained toward it. Nothing. Lorne, your gene expression is stronger than mine. Can you... Rodney waved a hand at the door. Lorne nodded and ducked his chin, brow furrowing. He didn't need to hold out a hand, but sometimes physical gestures helped Rodney perform mental functions. Like pacing sometimes helped him think. I can feel it, Doc, but... Jonas? Do you have the gene? Jonas shuffled forward, and he tilted his head, gaze going distant. Still nothing. What if we all do it together? Jonas suggested. Lorne counted them in, and Rodney strained with his mind, searching for the buzzing, which suddenly crescendoed. A hologram appeared in the air before them. They all recoiled sharply.
Sir? Hilda asked.
We're fine, for now. Be ready for exfil if this goes sideways. Lorne narrowed his eyes at the image, which was some kind of 3D rendering of a cube comprised of multiple smaller cubes. Each of the smaller cubes had numbers, ancient numbers, glowing on its faces. The cube in the middle had some kind of glowing sphere inside of it. Is this a lock? Sally asked. Jonas narrowed his eyes. It must be. Or some kind of combination lock to grant us access.
Can you break the combination, Doc?
Lorne looked at Rodney. The cube was 5 by 5 by 5. 125 inner cubes, each with, best as Rodney could see from the outer layer of cubes, unique numbers on all 6 faces. He reached into his backpack for his laptop. I can write an algorithm that'll run every possible combination. Except we don't know how many numbers are needed for the combination, Jonas pointed out. What's up with the ball in the middle? Hilda asked. As if on cue, circles appeared on each face of the central cube, and on the adjoining faces of all the immediately adjoining cubes. Not circles, holes. The ball rolled into an adjacent cube, and there was a flash of blue light, and the ball was back in the center cube. It's a puzzle, Jonas said. We have to get the ball... somewhere. Do we have to have the gene to manipulate the ball in cubes? Sally narrowed her eyes, studying the arrangement of faintly flickering holographic images. Hilda reached out and tapped the central cube. It shone a little brighter, flickered less. I guess not. Where do we have to make the ball travel to? Lorne asked, also studying the puzzle intently.
Circles lit up on all the surface faces of the outermost layer of cubes.
To the edge, then, Lorne murmured.
He bit his lip, which was mildly distracting, and the ball rolled from the central cube and into the cube right above it. There was another blue flare of light, and the ball was back in the center.
Not that way.
Lorne shrugged and tried again, this time to the cube below. Another flare of blue light. As much as Rodney disliked blazing red as a signal of failure on, say, an exam paper, that particular shade of blue was going to start annoying him fast, because he knew this puzzle would be fiendishly difficult. The ancients would only trust their most important tech to their own most intelligent engineers, or to successors of equal brilliance. Not that intellectual brilliance automatically equated to moral excellence. Lorne tried the right cube next, but received another flare of blue. A message in ancient appeared in the air above the entire megacube. Rodney scanned it, translating quickly. Jonas, he noticed, was reading it as well.
He could read ancient?
If he had an eidetic memory, learning languages was probably easier for him than most.
Stop guessing, Jonas said, at the same time as Rodney cursed.
Lorne snatched his hand back from the puzzle.
Okay, what's up?
There's both a time limit and a wrong guess limit, Rodney said. Fail within a certain time or guess wrong too many times and the puzzle locks down for a period of... He did some quick mental calculations. At least a full day cycle on this planet, whatever that is. Before we can try again.
Lorne nodded.
I'll stand guard unless you need me, then.
I fear I am little help as well, Sally said, apologetic.
Hilda grinned.
Already standing guard.
All of the cubes were the same color. If the puzzle were merely a question of spatial reasoning, Lorne or Sally probably could have helped solve it.
The numbers on the cube faces must be important, Jonas said.
He narrowed his eyes. 645, 372, 649.
So he could read ancient.
Rodney scanned the numbers, always a string of three, on all the other cube faces. One of them was 0, 8, 147.
One of these must not be like the others, but how do we tell? Jonas asked.
Rodney flicked a glance at the countdown timer floating above the puzzle.
We have half an hour to figure out how.
What? No prime, not prime? Lorne asked, tone light and jocular, but also with a tense edge.
Not helping, Rodney hissed.
Only Jonas said, 147 is a prime number.
Rodney blinked, scanned all the other numbers on all the other faces.
You're right, this is the only face containing a prime number.
He tapped it, and a hole appeared.
The ball rolled through it and into the next cube. Rodney braced himself for the blue flash of light, but there was none.
Lorne blinked. I was just kidding. I didn't think that would actually work.
Jonas clapped him on the shoulder, but it did, so thank you.
Lorne shrugged, but he still looked pleased.
Glad I was useful beyond just pointing and shooting.
All right, prime numbers it is. I can win this game.
Rodney grinned.
We've got this in the bag.
He just had to check 80 numbers in each cube and see which face contained the prime number.
Sally and Hilda kept glancing back at Rodney, intrigued, as he slowly guided the ball through the puzzle. When the ball finally reached the outermost layer of the cube, Jonas and Sally and Hilda cheered, which was gratifying, but also...
Hang on, Rodney said.
Jonas, you knew that 147 was a prime number. How come you weren't helping me?
Not nearly as fast as you, Jonas shrugged. You kept figuring it out before I did, so...
He was cut off by a loud grinding noise, and Rodney remembered. They weren't just solving a puzzle. They were unlocking a door.
And they'd succeeded.
Sally, Hilda, and Lorne whipped around, rifles at the ready, as the door slid open and just vanished into the cave wall, as if it had never existed.
But there was no room beyond. Behind the door had been some kind of box or stasis chamber. Because instead of gazing in wonder and awe at a room full of perfect ZPM-sized crystals or a ZPM recharging facility, they saw a young man. He wasn't dressed in pale leathers like most ancients Rodney had encountered previously. Compared to them, this young man was a riot of colour. Red scarf, bright blue shirt, brown jacket, black trousers, sturdy boots. Something to the cut and style of his clothes was vaguely medieval, but Rodney was no anthropologist or fashion historian. The male looked to be barely in his early 20s, with pale skin, probably from lack of sunlight, and jet black hair, high cheekbones and unfortunately protuberant ears.
"Is he dead?" Hilda whispered.
"He looks alive," Sally said. Right. She was a medical doctor. She'd be able to make that determination best. "If he's not dead, he's been preserved by medical technology above and beyond anything we've encountered before." "If he was preserved, how old do you think he is?" "The oldest ancients I've met who had survived in frozen stasis was multiple millions of years old, so who knows?" Jonas said. He sounded sad, Rodney thought. Or perhaps wistful. "She didn't survive long after she emerged from the ice in Antarctica, but she carried a deadly disease," Jonas continued. "Given that this man is in a proper preservation chamber, he may become fully conscious once his systems release him from stasis."
"Disease?" Lorne echoed.
"Masks on, everyone." Rodney fumbled his gas mask out of his tag vest. Jonas had his on in seemingly an instant, and then Hilda and Sally had theirs on. Sally reached out to help Rodney, but the man opened his eyes. They were a brilliant shade of blue. When he spoke, his words didn't sound ancient at all.
"Hvar mich? Hvar Olympe? Du vil?"
The man, boy, man's voice was a mid-range tenor, warm, pleasant. The language he spoke was almost German-sounding. "That wasn't any ancient I know," Jonas said. He glanced at Hilda and Sally. "Do either of you speak ancient?" They both shook their heads. The man didn't seem to notice them, was patting himself down. Once he was satisfied that he was in one piece, he stepped forward and out of the stasis chamber, which immediately retracted into the ground, revealing another door behind it, this one covered in ancient writing, but none that Rodney could make heads or tails of. The man came up short in front of Lorne, who had a rifle trained on him, and raised both hands in a universal gesture of surrender. Whatever he said was still entirely unintelligible. "Ayana, the ancient woman I met. She had amazing regenerative and healing power and was incredibly intelligent," Jonas said softly. Rodney remembered tales of other ancients who could do Emperor Palpatine-level stuff like shoot lightning, and he was glad Lorne was between him and the strange man. Hilda tried speaking what sounded like German to the man, who cocked his head, curious. He replied, but Hilda just looked confused. She tried a couple of other European-sounding languages. The only European language Rodney knew well was French, and of course cussing in Czech. It was Jonas who said, in ancient, "Hello, we mean you no harm." The man raised his eyebrows, and when he spoke, it was in heavily accented ancient. "I also mean you no harm. You are Alterans, then?"
"What's he saying?" Lorne asked.
"He's asking if we're Alteran," Rodney said. "The proto-ancients? How old is he?" Lorne's grip on his rifle didn't waver.
"We're not, but we are the...
how do you say technological and philosophical successors?" Jonas looked at Rodney. "That's beyond my grasp of ancient," Rodney said. "If he's calling us Alterans, then he's not an Alteran." He wasn't speaking ancient. "Ask him where he's from." Rodney's ancient was mostly limited to programming their computers, not making conversation. Jonas cleared his throat, but
But then the man waved a hand, and his eyes flared golden yellow.
Lorne swore, "Gold!"
Only the man spoke, this time in English with a sort of British accent, and without the uncanny resonance of a Gold or Tok'ra speaking through their host.
"Hello, I'm Merlin. Who are you?"
That didn't mean the man wasn't a Gold. They didn't always reveal themselves through their voices. The flash of yellow in their eyes was always a sign of their presence. But Jonas was already speaking.
"Merlin? As in, the ancient who built the Sangreal to help destroy the Ori?"
"Obviously he's lying," Rodney said. "He's not that Merlin. A Gold imposter who'd been in stasis wouldn't know what we'd know about Moros."
Only the man kept on speaking, his tone bright and pleasant.
"Your name is also Merlin? What a strange coincidence."
Merlin, if that was really his name, smiled, and he looked quite bright and cheerful. And so young.
"No, sorry. My name is Jonas Quinn," he said.
"Oh, well. Nice to meet you, Jonas Quinn. What's with the, face decoration?"
Merlin peered at him.
"It's a mask, just in case you have a disease," Jonas said. "The last time we encountered someone who'd been in stasis, they were carrying an ancient and deadly disease.
And one you'd have no immunity for." Merlin nodded wisely.
"Why are you just talking to the Gold?" Rodney demanded.
"He's not a Gold," Jonas said. "They only developed the technology to conquer planets 22,000 years ago. The Ancient are called the Ancients for a reason. If he called us Alterans, then he's much older than that. Besides, the only time a Gold ever entered this galaxy, it was because they came with us."
"He could be faking us out," Rodney snapped.
Merlin was patting himself down again.
"Best as I can tell, I don't have any diseases."
"Of course he'd say that if he wanted to trick us into letting ourselves get infected."
Rodney's heart raced. He wished he had Shepard and Taylor and Ronan with him. They'd definitely be able to defeat a single Gold. This one didn't have any weapons. Surely Lorne had a good chance of taking him out.
Merlin peered at them.
"What's a Gold? Is that what you call people from Rialdo?"
"Would a Gold fake not knowing what a Gold was?" Rodney's mind raced.
"Usually they were too egotistical for that. But for the sake of deception..."
"We can't take any chances," Lorne said. "As you pointed out, what may not seem like a disease to you may be dangerous to us simply due to lack of exposure. Poe, scan him."
"Yes, sir."
"Cover me, Spiker."
Sally lowered her rifle, and Hilda shifted slightly, keeping her rifle trained on the so-called Merlin, who had raised his hands in surrender again.
They were using last names. They were in hardcore marine mode. This situation was urgent.
Sally reached into her tac vest and drew out what looked vaguely like an LSD.
"This is a medical scanner," she said to Merlin, her tone calm and professional, like she was coaxing a nervous animal. "It won't hurt you, and I don't even have to touch you. Just hold still and let me make sure you really are disease-free, and then we can take these masks off." Rodney wasn't sure he wanted to take his mask off. The strap around the back of his neck would prevent the Gold from taking him as a host as well. The little medical scanner lit up, and Sally tapped at the screen expertly. Lorne and Hilda kept their rifles trained on Merlin, who tilted his head. His eyes flashed yellow again. No, not yellow. Golden. And it wasn't his entire eyes, like most Gold, sclera and all. It was just his irises. He wasn't a Gold. Rodney didn't think they could fake that kind of thing. "It's fascinating to see the technology in action when before I only knew it in my dreams," Merlin said, almost to himself.
"It's clear, sir," Sally said. "No diseases, no symbiote."
She tucked off her mask, then tucked it and her scanner away. Lorne lowered his rifle but didn't let it go, removed his own mask one-handed and put it back in its case on his belt, all without taking his eyes off of Merlin, who looked amused. Jonas and Hilda also took off their masks. Slowly, Rodney did the same, his heart thudding dully in his chest.
Merlin lit up when he saw Jonas.
Oh, you're quite handsome. Not as handsome as my Will, but... He lowered his gaze for a moment, shadows descending in his eyes.
Who are your friends?
Lorne made introductions. Merlin's expression turned wary at the mention of his and Hilda's military ranks, but when Sally and Rodney were introduced as doctors, he lit up again.
I used to study with a royal physician, Gaius. He wasn't very famous. I don't expect you'd have heard of him.
I'm not that kind of doctor, Rodney said quickly. He'd heard of the times when people had wanted Daniel Jackson to treat their wounds. On our planet, a highly trained scholar is also called a doctor, Sally said.
I'm just Jonas, but I guess it would be fair to say I'm also a scholar, he added, with his ever-pleasant smile.
You had enough skill to awaken me, and you have Alteran Anquietas technology.
We're looking for a way to make a ZPM, Rodney said.
Ipotentia, Jonas broke in, and right. Of course the ancients themselves wouldn't have called their energy sources that.
Ah, and so you have come to the Crystal Caves.
Merlin's smile remained, but his gaze was guarded.
What would you use the Potentia for?
We are the current denizens of Atlantis, Lorne said. We are residing in the city and doing our best to combat the Wraith.
Merlin's gaze darkened.
I have... glimpsed the Wraith in my dreams.
Your dreams, Rodney echoed. You're aware of the passage of time while you sleep?
I wouldn't call it sleep, exactly. Merlin shrugged.
How old are you? Hilda asked.
That's a complicated question. I don't know how age is reckoned where you come from, as compared to the reckoning in my homeland.
That he said homeland and not home planet or home world was probably significant, but Rodney wasn't much interested in pressing the issue further.
How are you speaking English anyway? Jonas asked.
Ayana simply learned it very quickly, but you... Your eyes turned golden, and then you were speaking English.
Translation spell, Merlin said. I'm not really speaking your tongue. I am speaking my own tongue, but you're hearing it in yours. And vice versa.
Spell, Rodney echoed.
As in, magic?
Merlin raised his eyebrows.
You sound skeptical.
Magic is a myth, Rodney said. It's not what many primitive people call magic was either superstition or mystical interpretation of natural phenomena or science they didn't yet understand.
Then no one has magic where you come from?
Merlin's gaze turned inward, shadowed.
Did Uther's hatred of sorcery result in the eradication of the druids and all others who had magic, in the end?
Uther. Druids. Weren't druids just... ancient Celtic priests? The name Uther was only vaguely familiar.
Only Hilda piped up.
I've heard ancients could do stuff like shoot lightning out of their hands and move things with their minds. They even could do stuff like telepathy. Can you do that?
A lot of those things do seem like magic, Lorne murmured.
While Rodney would be the first to admit that he didn't really understand the science of ascension and all the superhuman skills that came with it, he knew there was still a scientific basis for it. It just wasn't magic. But if this kid calling himself Merlin was as old as Jonas thought he might be, then maybe he hailed from a time when not all ancients, Alterans, had the skills of ascending ancients, when their people still thought those skills were magic.
I can do many things with magic. Merlin smiled enigmatically.
He looked so young, but Rodney reminded himself that the man was literally ancient, or even more ancient than the ancients. And though he'd been in stasis for a long time, he'd apparently been able to absorb, understand, what was happening around him during the passage of time. Hilda was the one who asked what Rodney wanted to know. What they all wanted to know.
So,
What's behind the door? Is it really a way to help us with the, potentia?
Merlin's smile for her turned a little sly.
You'll have to open the door to find out.
How do we open the door? Jonas asked.
Rodney resisted the urge to roll his eyes, as if Merlin would just tell them.
The same way you opened my casket, by solving the puzzle, Merlin gestured to the door.
You couldn't just magic it open for us? Lorne asked.
Merlin shook his head. That's not how the spell works. I cannot open the door, and no one can force me to open the door. Anyone who tries will fail.
Something dangerous gleamed briefly in his eyes, like light off the edge of a blade, and Rodney was reminded that he was something akin to an ancient. They had been capable of incredible things. While most of them had generally been what modern humans might consider morally good, this man hailed from another eon and another culture, and they would be foolish to assume that he saw the world as they did.
Then he stepped aside with a broad, sweeping gesture.
Have at it, brave explorers.
Lorne turned to Jonas and Rodney.
You two got this?
You had the last one.
I'm a scientist, not a linguist, Rodney protested, but he edged closer to the door anyway, since he was probably the most fluent at ancient. It was identical to the previous one, a smooth stone surface, but for the words engraved on it. No evidence of tool marks or any other indications as to how it was manufactured or installed. When Rodney peered at the walls, he couldn't even see the space where the other door had retracted.
Lorne shifted so he was standing between Merlin and Rodney. Jonas came to stand beside Rodney, scanning the writing covering the door. The script looked ancient, but not quite the form Rodney knew. Of course, the language of the ancient had evolved over time. It still wasn't entirely clear just how much time, since Morris, Merlin, and Morgan Le Fay, Ganon's Law had combated the Ori only about 1,000 years ago or so. Jonas began to read aloud. What he was saying was total gibberish and not ancient at all. Maybe it was just an older version of ancient? Old English didn't really sound anything like modern English, after all. But Merlin himself had spoken ancient, if with a thick accent. Or was that the proper accent? The way people didn't know what ancient Egyptian really sounded like.
Merlin smiled and said, "Your accent isn't bad."
Jonas smiled at him in return.
"Thank you. What does it mean?"
"Hang on," Rodney said. "If your magic spell only makes it so we think we're hearing each other's languages, but we're not, how can you tell we've spoken another language?"
"The same way the gate translation will turn everyone else's languages into English, but not Selenka's cursing, I suppose," Lorne said.
Rodney would be the first to admit that no one was really sure how the gate translation worked. After all, Earth had not one but two gates, and hundreds of languages had flourished there just the same. Maybe it was a population density thing. Maybe it was...
"What language do you speak?" Rodney asked.
"Since you also speak ancient."
"I speak..." And the word was rendered in his original language, the gate translation system and his own spell apparently having no English rendering for it.
Which, was Jonas even speaking English? Rodney shoved that aside for examination later.
"This writing is Alteran, but spelling out my language," Merlin explained.
"It's like romanization," Sally said. "The way languages in Roman alphabet can be rendered, with varying degrees of accuracy, in Roman alphabets, so they can be pronounced if not necessarily understood."
Merlin beamed. "Yes, exactly like that."
"But what does it mean?" Hilda broke in.
Merlin recited.
"Ich im wunderlich zubicht, seethe thak dioreth. Ich that jewunerlich in sedlike hivia. Samutwist is queme, sahach wat ich hatte."
"And the translation?" Jonas asked. Merlin smiled and recited further. "I am a wonderful creature who holds you dear. I transform the ordinary into the wonderful. Being together is pleasant. Say what I am called."
"I hate riddles," Rodney muttered. Hilda, Sally, and Lorne all looked thoughtful.
This could be very challenging, Jonas said. Riddles, like humor, are often quite dependent on context, and we don't have the same cultural context as the person who wrote the riddle.
Rodney eyed Merlin, who was standing with his hands clasped behind his back, expression expectant and also amused.
What could the answer be? Surely Merlin knew.
Rodney thought rapidly. A creature that could transform a person. Was that a literal animal? Or perhaps something a bit more shrewd and clever, like a special type of bacteria? Was it two types of creature in some kind of special symbiosis? Was that what being together was in reference to?
You know what you should try? Hilda said, derailing Rodney's train of thought.
He frowned at her, but the others turned their attention to her. She cleared her throat and then affected a deep, booming voice.
Speak, friend, and enter.
Sally burst out laughing.
You've watched too many movies.
Lorne chuckled. Would be nice if it was that easy, wouldn't it? Rodney was confused.
Wait, I know this one, Jonas said. King of the Rings, right?
That would be Lord of the Rings, Rodney said, though he'd never read the books and only seen the movies once and never really cared for them. He preferred science fiction over fantasy.
And of course it's not that easy. Focus on the task at hand, please.
It couldn't hurt to try, Hilda protested. Jonas recited the translation of the riddle again, frowning. Then he turned to Merlin, who hadn't batted an eyelash at the laughter and teasing.
Can you say it again? In the original language.
And Merlin did.
Jonas said, What is the word for friend in your language anyway?
Merlin told him.
Freund. See? The door didn't open. Your Lord of the Rings trick didn't work, Sally said to Hilda, though her ribbing seemed good-natured. Only Jonas repeated the word, and the door retracted silently.
Sally gaped.
Lorne immediately swung his rifle up.
How did that work? Rodney demanded.
Merlin said he couldn't open the door, Jonas said. Even if he said the password, the door wouldn't open. Didn't mean he couldn't tell it to me once we'd figured it out ourselves.
How was the answer to that friend? Rodney protested.
Hilda pumped a fist in the air.
Ha! It did work!
Of course, only a friend could enter the place where some of the most important ancient technology is kept, Merlin said. He stepped aside and made a sweeping gesture, bidding them enter the next room.
Lorne went first, rifle at the ready. Rodney and Jonas and Sally followed. Hilda remained just outside the door.
Merlin followed them, and for a moment Rodney was wary, having a stranger between him and the only exit to a high-ceilinged stone chamber with floor-to-ceiling shelves of various heights, several clusters of waist-high workbenches scattered across a too smooth floor. But Rodney's gaze was drawn to the rows upon rows of ZPMs lining the shelves, in various states of completion, some only half-built, others fully built but without the black lines that always looked like stained glass windows LED lines, and some completed.
Rodney's LSD pinged, and he checked the display. Plenty of the ZPMs still had some charge, but plenty were empty.
Lorne and Sally spread out, clearing the room. Jonas headed straight for the workbenches. One bench had crystal pieces scattered across it. Had someone left in the middle of building a ZPM?
This is amazing, Rodney said.
We could power Atlantis forever. And the kids' planet. Their shields could stay powered on forever too. And Harmony's planet, and even Mara's planet. If we could replicate the shields from Kids' planet, we could install them on other planets and...
He had no words.
Jonas reached out and pressed one hand to the cylindrical, silvery, gleaming object in the middle of one of the benches.
This is it, isn't it? He asked.
Merlin nodded. Yes. It's what puts power into a potentia.
Rodney was beside Jonas in an instant.
How do we turn it on? How do we open it? How?
But it had writing on it, this time in a script other than ancient, all lines and angles instead of the typical ancient blocks. Of course it had a password. As if Rodney didn't have a password on his own computer. Sally paused beside Jonas. Now this looks like something from Lord of the Rings. Runes. At that, Rodney realized she was right. The letters looked like the runes that the Asgard used on their ships, but the Asgard were all extinct. Although there were Vanir in this galaxy. Rodney would know. He and Daniel Jackson had been damn well kidnapped by them one time. He whipped around to study Merlin. Was Merlin actually Asgardian? Like a proto-Asgard? From before they'd started cloning themselves and lost their more human-looking appearance? Is this a spell? Rodney asked Merlin. Do we have to solve a puzzle to access this too? But Jonas just traced a hand across the letters and said, What were the Alterans fighting for? Why did they leave their home galaxy? The ancients came here to combat the Wraith. But all along, what have they also been fighting? It took Rodney a moment to comprehend the solemnity in his voice, the shadows in his eyes. The Ori, Rodney said. Jonas had lost much to the Ori, more than Rodney could comprehend. Jonas said, Unhallowed are the Ori. Merlin said, Unhallowed is seen on the Yaldras. Jonas repeated Merlin's words, and the cylinder unlocked. A seam appeared down the side and split open, revealing the hollow interior where a single ZPM could fit. After all this time, the key to unlocking the secret to clean renewable energy was a little piece of anger? Blasphemy? Pettiness? Truth, Rodney realized. You or I were not gods. We're not all-powerful and hallowed. Yes, they had power, but not all of it, and they could be defeated. Had been defeated by SG-1. All that was left of the war against the Ori was this. And all the lies it had claimed, planets ravaged, civilizations and cultures destroyed. Rodney looked at Merlin. We'll do good with this. He tried to pick up the cylinder, but it was affixed to the table. Of course it was. That answers that, Vaughn said. We'll have to secure this place and return with a bigger team, set up an outpost to study the tech, and finish what CPMs we can. He tapped his radio and spoke to Dorothy. Shouldn't he have been checking in with her the entire time? How long had they been down here anyway? In this cave which should have been pitch black but for their flashlight, but was lit from the crystals, which glowed ever so faintly. Rodney stepped back and really looked around. How was this place even real? It defied the laws of physics and engineering. He looked at Merlin. This place was magic. Will we have to solve the puzzle and say the password every time we come back? Hilda asked Merlin from the doorway. Are we going to be waking you up every time? He shook his head. You have demonstrated your worthiness to be here. Rodney raised his eyebrows. From solving a few puzzles? Intellect does not equal morality. Merlin tilted his head, and his eyes flashed golden again, and he spoke directly into Rodney's mind, his lips not moving. You are worthy, even if at times you do not believe in your own self-worth. Rodney jerked back, eyes wide. He looked at the others, but they didn't seem to know what had happened. Sally and Hilda looking around, Lorne still talking to Dorothy, Jonas taking photos and videos with a little digital camera for Anthro. Merlin smiled then, tired and resigned, and turned to Hilda. Now that you have opened the door, you may set your security as you please. What about you? Jonas asked. Where will you go? Would you want to come back to Atlantis with us? Merlin studied Jonas for a long moment in silence, and Jonas stilled, his pleasant smile dimming. Was Merlin using telepathy on Jonas too? Merlin was an ancient. He was dangerous without even lifting a finger. Sure, he looked lanky and skinny, but... No, Atlantis is not the place for me. And neither is Earth.
Merlin said. I will wait for my once and future king. And my will. It took Rodney a moment to realize he meant a person, a man named Will. He had a man named Will, the way Jonas had Teal'c and Rodney had Carson. How long do you have to wait? Rodney couldn't help but ask. Merlin smiled at him, and the expression might have been sweet but for the way his gaze was distant, hollow. Suddenly the man standing before Rodney was not a lanky youth, but an ageless, otherworldly being, who knew eons the way Rodney knew years. Rodney felt his head start to spin, was drowning in that endless gaze. So you're just going to go back to sleep? Sally asked. Maybe, Merlin said, blinking, and he was a smiling young man again. Or maybe I'll walk the stars for a time, learn more about what has happened in the world since my king and my will crossed the waters of Avalon. When was the last time you walked the stars? Jonas asked. There was an ancient Alteran named Moros, Merthyn. He fought the Ori, and he knew King Arthur and his knights. There's power in myth and magic, Merlin said, in invoking the names of those who came before to aid a quest in the here and now. Jonas nodded. We are grateful to him, and to you who came before him. Thank you for your help, Lorne said, and Rodney had almost forgotten he was there. Merlin shrugged. I didn't do much. You solved the puzzles on your own. We couldn't have done it without your language help, Sally said, and Merlin dipped his chin in acknowledgement. Can you teach me your language? Jonas asked. Do you have a dictionary or a lexicon or something similar? Do you have parchment or paper or something to write on? Merlin asked. Jonas reached into his pocket and came up with a small spiral-bound top-slip notebook, like the kind detectives use in old crime TV shows. All I have is this. But Merlin took it from him and held it flat on his palm. He spoke in his own language, or maybe a magical language, and his eyes flared golden, and then he was holding a thick, heavy, leather-bound tome with a gilded spine and cover. The script on it was both in ancient and in the runes on the ZPM charging device. This is the best I can offer you. He sounded apologetic as he handed it back to Jonas. Thank you, Jonas said. He clutched the book to his chest. I'll study it well. And the next time I see you again, I'll call you friend. Merlin smiled warmly and patted his arm. You just made a whole book out of basically thin air, Rodney said. How? Magic, Merlin smiled. It was Lorne who said, if you ever need our help, or even just want to visit, we're on Atlantis. I can find you, Merlin assured him. Lorne was silent for a long moment. More telepathy? But then he tapped his radio and informed Dorothy that they'd be returning topside. They left the ZPM workshop, and Merlin showed them how to close the door and set a password on it, one apparently in Jonas' native tongue, but not too hard for the others to pronounce. Magic is real? Rodney couldn't help but ask, hanging back as Lorne took point and Jonas, Sally, and Hilda followed. As you say, magic is just signs you don't yet understand. But until you understand it, it's magic, is it not? It's still science, Rodney protested. But it feels like magic, doesn't it? The first time you walked among the stars, did it feel like magic or science? Merlin uttered several syllables, and a flame appeared above his open palm, lighting the way through the crystal-lined tunnels, golden light reflecting off the faceted walls. It felt like science to me. I'm a scientist. I find science awe-inspiring, Rodney said. Merlin's smile was annoyingly knowing. It is good to have a sense of awe, to remain humble despite your quest to deconstruct the universe. As he reached the entrance to the caves, Dorothy called down to them. Sir, Atlantis dialed and sent a radio transmission through. I don't think they were able to reach you down there. We need it back in Atlantis. Roger that, Lorne called back to her. He turned to Merlin. Thank you again. He raised a hand in farewell. Then he turned and headed back into the caves, taking his small fire glow with him. Hilda and Sally ascended the ropes first, climbing with enviable ease. Jonas went next, then Rodney, and finally Lorne, before he, Hilda and Sally worked to disassemble the climbing system, leaving the pegs in place but coiling and stowing the rope. "Back to the gate," Lorne ordered, and they resumed marching order. Lorne set a quick pace, but Rodney's cardio had improved more than he realized. "To Jonas," he said, "what are you going to do with that book?" "Learn a language that is almost lost," Jonas said. He tucked the book into one of his larger pockets and put a protective hand over it. "What use will that be?" "Could use it to set or open other very old security. If nothing else, I can talk to Merlin next time I see him." Rodney wondered, but didn't ask, not yet, how many people still spoke Jonas's native tongue. "Fair enough," he said. Then he asked, "Do you believe in magic?" Jonas smiled his pleasant smile, and Rodney realized that Jonas was just a generally pleasant person, without pretense. Rodney knew most people considered him a generally unpleasant person, even if they understood the stressful and harried nature of his work. But... "Yes," Jonas said, "I do believe in magic. And that we all have it in us, if we learn how. No aura or gold necessary." "Fair enough," Rodney said. What in his life did he consider magical, when everything could be investigated and explored? Understanding how things work didn't make them less magical. Sometimes it made them more wonderful. But as Rodney watched the wormhole initiate, watched the shimmering pool of water, he supposed that some things were magical even if he did understand how they worked. And then he stepped through the event horizon and headed for home. The end.